coming on my Schwinn, it's not intelligent.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call them intelligent. There's nothing about them that would be characterized as intelligence. I mean, they engage in communication. There are some remarkable things that some insects do. One of the most remarkable things, honeybees, as is well known, have a language that has grammar. And
now, how do we know that?
Well, the system has been deciphered. You can actually, if you know the language of the honeybee, then you can actually watch them communicating to each other and detect, and you can figure out where they're telling the other bees to go fly and find pollen
sources.
Yeah,
well, what are they saying? Hey, how about direction?
They communicate direction. They communicate direction of floral nectaries. And you can actually go where you think they're directing the bees to go.
Well, they don't ever, you know, God, the queen is such a bitch. Dude, she's breaking my balls.
We're
I'm
not
telling
sure.
you, the queen, I'm sick to death of her.
We're not
one
sure
of these
if
days,
they can do that or not.
One of these days, I mean, pow, when the queen's not looking out.
I don't know of any evidence that refutes that they're saying that.
I'll
so it's a possibility.
Her.
As a scientist, I can't refute that that's happening, but we don't have any evidence
give
that
her
that's
a
happening.
Drone right up the old one. This is the Chris and Rob Show on WAIF. We have an open phone line at 513-749-1444. Our guest, Dr. Kurt Pickett, is an entomologist and knows more about bugs than Rob and I know about girls, which isn't saying much. So call now, 513-749-1444. Now, what about, and we're going to talk about cicadas here in a minute, but we're going to get all this fun stuff out of the way first. When we were kids, we were told not to wear black T-shirts to school. We were told not to walk around with Kool-Aid on our upper lip. We were told not to walk around with our hair wet, because the African killer bees were coming. They're in Mexico now. They're going to be in Texas tomorrow. And next thing you know, they're going to be in Hamilton County, USA, eating you. Where are the African killer bees? What's the dilly?
Well, they are here. I mean, not here. They're in the U.S. There are populations in Texas, and there are populations all across the Southwest in California.
Are they eating people like they used to scare us?
I don't think they've eaten too many people. They may have eaten one or two, but... but I don't, I'm not
sure. Well, I heard the thing that what's happening to them, and this is on the up and up, is what happened is, you know, it's like a crazy African bee meets a crazy South American bee, which created this super crazy bee. And there then what they're doing now, though, is they're making love with the normal, calm Mexican and American bees, and thus these crazy hybrid bees are sort of getting a little... normal Mexican-American blood in them and calm them down a little bit, if bees have blood.
There's some truth somewhere
thank
in
you.
That.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
He said somewhere in there.
Yeah, thank you.
There were some words in there that, if rearranged in a different way, would make a truthful sentence.
Mexican.
Yeah, so there was a Brazilian researcher named Kerr, and he wanted to stimulate the honey production in Brazil. And so he wanted to get some strains of bees from Africa that were very... very productive of honey, and breed them with some maybe not so productive bees that were in Brazil.
Lazy Brazilian bees.
And what he ended up getting was a very aggressive bee that is a pretty good honey producer. And actually, Brazil, I think, is the fifth largest producer of honey now
there's
in the world.
There's some honeys. If you've seen the slideshows from Rio, there's some honeys in Brazil.
It's true. So they are very aggressive, but, you know, they're aggressive for a bee. They're aggressive for a honeybee, and it's true that, you know, they have, just like all honeybees, they have a pheromone that when one bee stings, it stimulates the other bees to attack as well, and they're much more responsive to this pheromone than the typical European bee that we have here. But compared to yellow jackets, they're not, I mean, as aggressive as the yellow jacket populations that we have here, and the media just kind of picked up on this term killer bee. I don't actually know where that started. It may have started in the media itself, but it just kind of got hyped, you know, hyped up, and everyone was afraid. And anyway, they are here, and they're not really causing a lot of trouble.
So you never answered Rob's question from about 30 minutes ago. If you take the world's meanest killer bee and the world's meanest wasp, and you're a wasp expert, and put them in a fair fight without any weapons or anything, just a fair fight, which one would win?
I don't think they would fight.
just go get a drink and hang out together?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it would depend on the bee and it would depend on the wasp. If you put a honeybee, I don't know. This is all speculation, but
You might want to see if you can get some funding for this.
Would have to win. It's a possibility.
When you go back to
maybe
the museum.
Maybe a couple of $100 million.
See, yeah, they'll give you some money so you can have BWASP
Could
fights.
Be important for the military.
You need like a hot place so you can get them hot.
If you do a study like that, let me know so we can make wagers.
All right, great.
All right, that'd be cool.
So you got the honeybee.
I'm saying wasp. There.
Wasp and wasp.
I say, my mind is in the wasp.
Because a wasp can sting repeatedly, right?
Some can, that's true.
And the bee, it's a one shot and he rips his butt off.
That's true in some cases, right. She would be, yeah. Only the female sting.
Of course.
Right.
That's true with humans,
that's
too.
That's all my true.
Only female mosquitoes bite, too.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a mosquito question.
That has nothing to do with what you guys are thinking of.
I have a mosquito question, but this goes back to my very stoned undergraduate days.
Okay.
Are you ready
Let's
for
hear
this
it.
One?
All 8 years of them.
We used to sit around doing bong hits, and this actually came up actual drug conversation junior year of college. Are you ready for this
I'm
one?
I'm ready.
If Dude A was tripping, I mean, he was just ripped. He's just tripping, right? Let's say he's got all kind of drugs in his system. He's got a LSD and PID and STP and XTC and everything else in his blood system. These are some exotic drugs, dude.
STP?
I know you're not as hip as I am.
STP, yeah, you're lubricated.
Let's say you got dude, and he's got 12 different varieties of acid coursing through his bloodstream, and he's seeing the purple monkeys and the rainbows and everything, the Grateful Dead and everything else. And he's hanging out on the back porch. A mosquito comes by and stings him or starts sucking blood out of him. Question A, does that mosquito start seeing trails? And then question number two, let's say the mosquito actually flies off and stings the next guy, but the next guy is sober, stone cold sober, like say it's a cop, and he stings that guy. Can he put enough of that drug from his mosquito, from his little mosquito snout sticking in the guy's arm to get the next guy, let's say Dude B, can he get Dude B high?
Now, is the
Did you
cop
follow all
on LSD?
No. Dude A is on LSD. 15 different varieties, okay? Because they got more than one variety these days. All right? This actually came up
I'm pretty sure.
during a study session once.
No, I thought it came up during class.
Yeah. So question number one is, does the mosquito get its own version of a little mosquito buzz? And number two, when the mosquito stings the next guy, and I'm just saying, let's say it's the soberest guy you know, like a cop. Well, the cop catch a buzz and start seeing the purple monkeys.
Well, I'm going to defer to answer the first question, but I can say to the second question that when mosquitoes bite you, they don't really inject anything, so the answer is no.
Well, no, they suck your blood out.
Right. I mean, they do leave behind some saliva, but they really don't put anything in. So if your idea is that the mosquito gets LSD in its body and then puts it in you, that's not going to work.
So he can't transfer the drug
in you. Right.
It's not like Keith Richards. You can't transfer. Yeah, there's no transfusion.
I don't think
place.
That you're going to get a tripping. You're not going to trip from getting
all right.
Bitten
but what about
mosquito.
The mosquito himself? Can the little mosquito dude, can he get high?
Well, from
if he bites the wrong guy? Like, let's say you got a mosquito and he doesn't know it, but the Grateful Dead just came to town. And there's all these warm bodies. And it's like you and me going to the Chinese buffet. And we're like, look at that. You got chicken and shrimp. Well, all of a sudden, the mosquito comes along the Dead concert. And there's 50 million deadheads. He has no idea that every single one of them is stoned to the gills.
Are now, you stoned right now?
Not yet. But then the mosquito comes down, bites a guy on the shoulder. Does the mosquito start tripping? This is a good question.
This is not a good question.
You know, this could be a basis for another a grant. You can't get the fighting one. You might want to pitch the.
I'm pretty sure
Chris's
the fighting
eighth,
one's better chance of getting funded.
His eighth sophomore year of college wanted to know about this. So the answer is.
The answer is this is not really.
They
worth
don't have
answering.
A big enough brain to get high.
Is that your answer? The mosquito doesn't have a big enough brain to get high.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Because you got to have a portion of your brain which controls stone. And they haven't evolved that far yet.
I wish you had been at that party 15 years ago because you could have answered that question.
That sounds like a question you would ask if you were under the influence of drugs.
We were that night.
I can believe it.
What
and as an official representative of the American Museum, I cannot endorse that behavior.
But you can test it on bugs. You could get do bugs get high? Can a bug get high? Can a bug get a contact buzz?
I just don't know.
Dr. Kurt,
all of a sudden the bugs flying into the walls and stuff.
What is the worst bug to have hit your car?
I don't know. Cicadas are pretty big.
Oh, I hit a cicada the other day, and there's a spot on my bumper the size of a bullet hole.
Yeah, they're pretty big. Actually, the ones here, We have bigger ones in Louisiana, at least by my memory. But I was smaller then, so. But I think the ones we have here are actually a little bit smaller than they get.
You're talking about the cicadas.
Right.
Do they have 17-year cicadas in Louisiana, too?
Yes, I think so. The brood actually, there are a number of different broods. You know, this is brood 10, as everyone knows now. But there are lots of different broods all over of 17- and 13-year cicadas. So there are some that occur in Louisiana.
But probably the New Orleans cicadas, you know, it could be 17 years. It could be 19. They don't give a damn. They just show up whenever they want to.
Yeah, maybe.
That's probably the way they work it.
Actually, some of the ideas about how 13-year cicadas came about was sort of, 17-year cicadas that emerged early. And that theory, actually, which was proposed in the late 60s, was sort of confirmed by a 13-year emergence happening just after, there was only a 17-year brood. And so there was actually some evidence that a 17-year brood had emerged, a portion of it had emerged at 13 years, but most of them were killed because it was so small. Most of them were killed by predators, and so it didn't persist.
Well, the stupidest thing I ever heard was when some cicada guy said that possibly the reason why they come out every 17 years is because 17 is a prime number.
Yeah, that's the dominant theory, yeah.
Well, I don't know, what eats a cicada? A raccoon?
Well, there aren't any specialist predators really on cicadas, and that's the point.
So you're saying a raccoon or a crow?
Those are generalist predators,
right?
Right.
So they would eat a cicada,
right? Right.
Like the damn raccoons are going to sit around with the calculator in charge of the moon, saying, right, "Hey, it's 16 years because they picked a number, an even number. We're going to get them this year."
No, the way the theory
that's nonsense.
Well, the way the theory operates, it's not nonsense. The theory operates is, you know, if there were a parasite, it's officially not nonsense. If there were a parasite that was tracking or trying to make a cicada its main prey, and it was going to specialize on cicadas, and specialist parasites or predators can actually, you know, do real harm to populations. Generalist predators aren't so bad, but specialist predators can be very bad, or parasites. And so if a specialist predator or parasite is going to specialize on cicadas, if cicadas have a life cycle such that they come out in a frequency that is divisible by some number, like 2 or 4, an even number, let's say, then these potentially specialist predators could come out every 2 years, and eventually they would hit on the cicada when the cicadas came out. So they would have an opportunity to be in the presence of the cicada. But if they're going to specialize on cicadas and the cicadas adopt a life cycle that is only occurring on prime numbers, like 17, then the specialists also have to adopt that same lifestyle if they're going to specialize on cicadas. Now, they can come out every single year, and every 17th year they'll encounter cicadas, but in that case they can't be specialists because they have to be eating something every other year. And so if they're going to specialize on cicadas, they would have to also synchronize their life cycle to the exact same cycle of 17 years. And presumably that's very difficult to do, and I think it's reasonable that it is difficult to imagine that a predator could synchronize its life cycle to coming out every 17 years.
Okay, I guess. Do you think that makes sense?
Uh-huh.
Okay. You think the raccoons could check the calendar and know that, hey, that's...
But it's not about raccoons, because raccoons are not going to specialize on cicadas, right?
So there could be, like, this other animal which would become a cicada, like just some other run-of-the-mill animal.
Right. I mean, probably something that, you know, would also come out every 17 years, presumably.
Don't the cicadas have specialized predators while they're in their underground state? I think they're larvae then?
Well, there's one. I mean, the 17-year cicadas have a fungus. There's one fungus that is apparently specialized to the cicadas, and it causes the abdomen to fall off when they're in the adult stage. But other than that, I don't know of any specialists that, you know, really. I mean, I think the major predator of underground, you know, when they're underground, is moles. I suppose that's their major predator. So
if they had one of these if humans had one of these predators, like you were saying, that would make their abdomens fall off, that'd be like we'd get born and we'd be about 3 weeks old and be like, oh, my stomach fell out.
Yeah, that'd be pretty bad.
That'd be horrible.
Yeah.
Hey, we're talking to Dr. Kurt Pickett. He's an entomologist from the American Museum of Natural History. We're going to play a track from this new CD called 17-Year Itch, and then we'll come back and take your calls. So please give us a call, and we're talking cicadas and any insect that you... Is there any insect you won't talk about?
Let me think about that.
Okay. Sounds like any insect you want, roaches, you know, anything that's an insect. Roaches, silverfish, beetles, wasps, butterflies, whatever. Give us a call here at 513-749-1444. Now, before the show started, you were telling me about Dr. Gene Kritsky.
Right. Local of Cincinnati.
We're going to play this song called Come Fly With Me.
One of the world's authorities on cicadas.
Okay.
Now, you know, how smart can this guy actually be when he's only studying something every 17 years? I mean, it's not like there are guys, who's E.O. Wilson? We talked to him. Like, he can go look at his ants anytime he wants to.
Yeah.
Are you impressed that we talked to E.O. Wilson? Are you very impressed that we talked to E.O. Wilson?
That's pretty impressive.
Thank you.
we were talking earlier, and we compared Dr. E.O. Wilson to, like, the Yoda of insectology.
Right, and we talked to him. He beat you.
He was
here
on our
show.
Yeah.
But this guy, this Kritsky clown, he
is not a clown.
Well,
he
seems to show up every... I mean, how can he study him the other 16 years?
Well...
I mean, you can study your waspers every day.
There are cicadas that come out. I mean... There are broods of cicadas that come out in different regions of the country. You know, they're not all synchronized to exactly the same 17-year cycle. There are other broods of 17-year cicadas that will come out next year, for example.
But don't you think if this guy was smart, he'd be in New York?
I think he is one of the world's authorities on cicadas, and that's a fact.
So you still have that southern hospitality and charm about you.
I'm just
you
telling you like it is. He's okay. A real man. He's a real dude. Okay.
Hello, Bridget. You're on the air with the Chris and Rob Show and an entomologist, Dr. Kurt Pickett.
He's
go.
He's the man.
Hi, I have a question.
Sure.
I saw a bug in my kitchen earlier. Uh-huh. It looked just like a roach, but it flew. Do roaches fly?
They do.
They do?
They do indeed.
All right, that's all I needed to know.
It was probably a roach.
Yeah, I've been seeing them like all over the house now. Is there anything that gets rid of them well?
Cigarette smoke. I'd take up smoking immediately.
Well, I mean, of course, pesticides would get rid of them, but you might not want to deal with that. You could also get some borax and sprinkle it around your house, which is pretty non-toxic. You can also go to a pet store probably and get something called diatomaceous earth, which is the major constituent of chalk, and it will actually help get rid of them.
About something called an iguana.
An iguana.
Or a lizard.
Well, Bridget, this is one of the questions that's plagued mankind since before we had fire, is what to do with the roaches. These things are indestructible.
Yeah, can they really survive an atomic bomb? I heard that.
Let's not find out.
I mean, that idea is just sort of, you know, hyped up. I mean, it's true that, you know, animals are differentially resistant to radiation, but, you know, the cockroach, there are lots of different cockroaches. I don't know what cockroach they're talking about, but I don't think that, you know, they certainly wouldn't be able to survive a direct blast, I can assure you of that.
There are some cockroaches in South America that are as big as a Volkswagen, and they spit poison on you.
Oh, God. But the borax is safe for kids and pets, right?
Yeah, I mean, borax is not gonna hurt children, and certainly if I were you, I would get some diatomaceous earth from a pet store and mix it with a small amount of borax. The diatomaceous earth itself is probably, you know, enough. What it does is it actually cuts the integument of the insects up in between their joints, and one of the things that insects can't do well is repair damage to their, you know, exoskeleton. If they have cuts and they start leaking their, you know, hemolymph for their blood, they can't really repair that so well, and so they kind of just bleed to death.
They don't have bones, do they?
No bones.
Huh. Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all you wanted, Bridget?
That's all I wanted.
Well, I hope you solve your roach problem, because roaches are a problem.
Yeah, they are. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Now, all bugs, all insects have wings at some point in their lifespan, right?
There are some insects that, you know, have secondarily lost wings. What we call insecta, you know, yes, I would say that group. How you define an insect is different, if you ask different people, there's a larger group of animals called hexapoda, which means they have six legs. And that includes things like silverfish and, you know, some things called springtails, calimbula. And they do not have wings, but they, you know, they are primitively, they lack wings. But then there are things that have wings, and some people call that group Insecta. Some people call that group Pteragoda. But yes, basically, most of the things you would encounter that you would probably call an insect have wings.
What about the three body parts? How's that fit into it?
Right. Entomology comes from entomo, which has to do with three different body parts, right? Three cuts, actually, is what it means literally. So yeah, they have a head, a thorax, and an abdomen.
How about that, Chris? Are you impressed with my knowledge and these intelligent questions I've been asking?
I'm taking notes.
Not a single one of my questions started with, I was stoned my fourth sophomore year as an undergrad.
That was a good question.
That was a great
question. That actually came up once.
And I bet it did.
This is the Chris and Rob Show on WAIF, and like I said about a half hour ago, we're going to play a song. And when we come back, we're going to take your calls, whether you're like Bridget and you have roach problems, or whether you're like just wondering what's with all these cicadas in the backyard. They're louder than a damn airplane. Give us a call, 513-749-1444. Now I'll play that track by Dr. Gene Kritsky and the 5 Billion in the Band, Come Fly With Me. It's from that new CD called 17 Year Itch. Local musicians sing songs about cicadas. Pretty clever idea, huh?
Is it really him?
Well, let's find out. Here we go. So this is the sound of cicadas in your backyard.
Yep.
Wow.
They're loud. Now, if this was really in your backyard, they'd be really loud. Like, turn your radio all the way up. That's what they sound like. Pretty cool, huh?
And you can raise the volume and then lower the volume and raise the volume.
Chris and Rob want to hear from you. No, really, they do. Call now, 513-749-1444. That's 513-749-1444. You're listening to Chris and Rob on WAIF.
We're here with the good Dr. Kurt Pickett from, what's the name of the museum in New York?
American Museum of Natural History.
That's pretty impressive. So that's the Museum of Natural History, since it's the American Museum of Natural History.
Well, the United States Museum is the National Museum, the Smithsonian. But the American Museum.
So you're the smartest bug guy in the U.S., pretty much.
No, that's definitely not the case.
Third? Top
maybe
five?
Maybe 41st.
Are you having fun here, or is this getting irritating yet?
I might lose my job, but yeah, hopefully not.
I think you were having fun like 20 minutes ago. Now you're getting bugged.
I need more coffee.
No fun. All right, needs more white cat. Yeah, let's talk to Terry. Hello, Terry. You're on with Dr. Kirk. Come on, Comer.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Terry.
Hello.
Hey, Mr. Pickett. I was wondering, you know, before
Doctor,
you said about them, you know, insects being primitive, and that's kind of how I picture them. Do they evolve? I mean, are they evolving, or are they just as they are?
Well, go ahead.
Well, I didn't say insects were primitive. What I said was that there are some insects that primitively lack wings. That's what I said.
Okay.
But I mean, insects are very sophisticated. I mean, when you say primitive, what some people think is simple, and they're certainly not that. Some people think that means old. They are old. But they are, you know, they are changing, of course. They, like all living things, evolve. And, you know, we can observe that change in their gene frequencies, for example, and many people study such things. I study the evolution of insect groups. That's my main focus.
Well, don't some insect that were killed off by DDT or something in the 50s, don't the same insects now eat that stuff for breakfast?
Right. I mean, actually, some of the strongest support that we have, there are actually many lines of support, but one of the very strong lines of support that we have for a particular theory of evolution, natural selection, the one that Darwin proposed, there are other theories of evolution, but natural selection is the dominant one. It comes from insect pesticide studies. You know, when you expose insects in a population in a cornfield to a pesticide, it kills most of them, but some of them are naturally resistant, and they survive and reproduce, and their offspring, on average, are more resistant than the original population. And so eventually the population as a whole comes to be resistant to whatever pesticide you're feeding them, just like you said. And that we observe that repeatedly with not only with insects and insecticides, but also with bacteria and antibiotics.
Anything else, Terry?
Yeah, here's a practical one for you.
Here's a practical one. Great.
Okay, I've got about 4 inches of dead cicadas around the maple tree in my front yard.
Right.
Should I remove them?
Well, I mean, they will, you know, supply your soil with a lot of nitrogen. There's no doubt about that. And so that could be good for the soil. They will also supply the air around your house with a lot of stink. That might be a reason to get rid of them. But, you know, they'll eventually decompose. And if you leave them there, it'll make your soil much richer than if you remove them. But they will start to stink. So it's
up to
you.
That's what I figured. It was kind of like a natural progression. I mean, the damage that they're doing to the leaves and the branches, you know, when they fall down and decompose, then they're, you know.
Right. Actually, I mean, they do, you know, superficial damage, and they can damage small shrubs. But for large trees, they actually stimulate fruiting, for example, by pruning away, you know, small stems and stems that might not be as healthy as others. They actually can increase the productivity of trees. So even though they do, you know, cause physical, you know, quote-unquote damage to the tree, in the end, in a lot of cases, they can actually help the tree to stimulate its growth. But small shrubs and such actually, you know, can be severely damaged, and so they should be covered.
Thanks a lot, Doc.
Mm-hmm.
Bye, guys.
Thanks, bye. Terry. Now, 17 years ago, what is now Great American Ballpark was a parking lot, so we don't have cicadas flying out of the outfield right now. But will we have them in 17 years? Will the cicadas find every grassy area, do you think? This is just conjecture, of course. But will the cicadas find every grassy area and dig underneath there, or do they need to be more trees around and stuff?
Well, you know, they lay their eggs in the trees above, you know, ground, and then the eggs hatch, and the first instar larvae drop to the ground. And so if they drop onto concrete, then they just die. If they drop on the ground, they burrow in and start sucking on the roots of grass and that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's if they lay eggs in the trees over those little patches of grass, then there might be cicadas beneath there.
That'd be pretty cool. Let's go to Doc Diablo. We were just thinking, what could Doc Diablo have to say about bugs?
Oh, actually, it's odd because you guys completely, it was like a psychic connection today.
What, you wanted to do cicadas on your show tonight?
No, I didn't want to do cicadas. I had a serious question about another type of bug.
Now, hold on. This is Dr. Diablo, the host of WEIF Speak of Diablo, which will air 2 hours after our program tonight at 2 a.m. Welcome to the program once again, Ken.
Well, good evening, and from one doc to another, hello.
Hello.
Now, just so you know, Dr. Pickett, you earned your title doctorate because you went to school a lot and got good grades. This doctor is a doctor of nothing but getting high.
Well, I'm a doctor.
We're all equal tonight.
I'm a doctor of psychological criticism.
Yeah. So what do you want, Doc?
Well, I was just actually curious, and now this is odd, because the other day I was gardening out in my yard.
Oh,
and
I bet you were.
Yes, I was. And
I bet you were.
Yes, we were. And as a matter of fact.
Yes, you are.
Listen to you guys.
Have you smoked it yet?
No. That's later. Okay. But anyway, this is very serious. So, okay, you know those common pill bugs that you see in your yard?
Right.
We have ones out here that are like bright blue and bright purple. And I didn't know if that was normal because, you know, we're out here by the Zimmer nuclear or former nuclear power plant. And I was just curious.
When you say bright blue, what do you mean?
They are like almost like a bright lavender color. They are very vibrant.
Well, they're shiny. You know, I mean, they're shiny and they're kind of a grayish blue.
No, these aren't a grayish blue. These are...
Easter egg purple?
Yes.
Never heard of that.
Hmm.
It could be the power plant, dude.
That's what I'm wondering.
It could be resistant to all known pesticides.
I was wondering, obviously. So if they're rebelling against the nuclear waste that's probably in the land out here, then... So if I capture one of these things, is it worth giving it to someone to study it, or...
Put it in an envelope, mail it to him.
Yeah, there you go.
I can do that.
Okay.
I can do that. So I'll get the contact information from the guys later, but I appreciate it, Doctor, very much.
No problem.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dr. Diablo. He'll be on it, too. Dr. Kirk, do people mail you bugs all the time and say...
Not all the time.
Well, what is this?
No, not all the time, but sometimes people... mail me wasps and ask me, you know, what kind of wasp is this? Is it one of the wasps I study is an invasive species to the U.S. And so a lot of times people will mail me wasps and say, you know, is this invasive species? And I'm actually appreciative of that because it helps me track the movements of the wasp across the U.S. So
now, if you have a wasp, but what you call the paper wasp, and they're building a nest up underneath your roof there,
right?
And you go ahead and you hit it with a broom. I mean, I know that they got teeny tiny little brains, but can they put together that, hey, the guy with the broom is the reason why our house just shook?
Oh, definitely.
Or are they too stupid? They fly out going, okay, what's going on? Why did we fly out? I forgot.
They're not that stupid. I mean, they definitely know that you're the one who did it, and they're definitely going to sic some retribution on you. I mean, they have tiny brains, but they're, I mean, and I said earlier, you know, they're not intelligent like we are, but they're not... That's stupid. I mean, they definitely can come after you, and they'll chase you, you know. They.
What about the garden hose? How far away do you need to be?
Well, I wouldn't go garden hosing wasp nests. I mean, that's not probably the best plan.
Well, you know, the real high-power garden hose, so it explodes the nest, you know.
Now, if you're going to spray something on a wasp nest, you should probably spray, you know, maybe an insecticide or something so that you have a chance of winning.
Okay. You know what my favorite kind of insecticide is? Is the kind that glues their wings together.
Yeah, the wasp freeze.
Yeah.
And then that
way,
good one.
That way you can just step on them. And just with every step, let them know who's boss. Hey, big boy, you came into the wrong yard. You built your little nest on the wrong deck this time, buddy. Not that stuff that kills
them. But they're
going to
be there next year again. So, you know, really they're the boss.
Well, I get to do it all over again.
And again.
You got to take your satisfaction wherever you can.
We've got an open phone line, 513-749-1444. Our guest is Dr. Kurt Pickett from the American Museum of Natural History. He's an entomologist. We're talking about cicadas, wasps, and any other bug you got on your mind. This next track is from that same 17-year-old CD. This is The Walker Project.
Welcome to the underground. Cicada time. I've been patient, I've been good. But after 17 years, I'm about to lose my mind. Creatures great and small, somehow we snuck on his list. I'm not trying to one night stand you, baby, but can't you see that's just the way it is? And I just want to fly to a place in the sky and someone to share. Don't mean to be
see. I would say that you're the most beautiful cicada in the bar tonight. And I was wondering if maybe we could get together and I could beat my chest for you. I want you in my arms. Am I making myself clear?
Get out of the house, man. We ain't down with that crap.
No Call way. Chris and Rob at 749-1444. This is WAIF.
Come on, you cicadas. You got to get out of here, you cicadas. You ain't no mind, no mind, no more. Friend of mine, no more, cicada. See, I sound like Chris Walker now. You get out of my life, you damn cicada.
WAIF, the Chris and Ramba late night talk show, and we would be remiss, Chris, if we went any further without mentioning Daniels. Right there on at the corner of Short Vine and appropriately enough, Daniels in the heart of sunny romantic Coryville Clifton. My gosh, Daniels. Oh.
You know, I've had a lot of cheeseburgers in this town. I've had all kind of cheeseburgers. I've had cheeseburgers and hamburgers. I've had hamburgers and I've had crap burgers, but I'll tell you, one of the best cheeseburgers in town is down there at Daniels. Daniels down there at the corner of Vine and Short Vine down there by Bogart's. There were more black t-shirts down there tonight than I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a big punk rock show or metal show down there at Bogart's, but who cares? Daniels at the corner, Short Vine and Daniels, my gosh, my goodness.
Hold on a minute. There's a guest here in the studio. We got Dr. Kurt Pickett here. He's an entomologist. That's a fancy word for bug expert. He's a bug expert. That also includes insects. Right. He knows a lot about bugs and insects. What's the difference?
Yeah, actually, insect is the larger group. Bug is restricted to a couple of orders of insect.
Mm-hmm.
Cicadas being one of them.
They're a bug?
The true bugs are in the order Hemiptera. And some people...
I was kidding. Is there really a difference?
No, there really is. Oh, okay. Yeah. There's a real thing called a bug, and it's the order Hemiptera. And cicadas are traditionally placed in an order called Homoptera, but it really looks like those two... there isn't a big distinction between those two mm-hmm. orders. So some people are starting to call them the same order now. So
now, where's the daddy long legs fit into all this?
Those
spider.
No, it's not. It's got 10 legs, you ding dong.
Daddy long legs?
Daddy long legs isn't a spider.
Those are...
It's not an arachnid, is it?
That's a different group of organisms called Opilionids.
Opilionids.
Right.
Opilionids. Not spider. Opilionids. What?
They're not spiders. There is a thing called a daddy long leg spider, but that's a different thing than what you're talking about. You're talking about an Opilionid.
I'm talking about the daddy long legs, the good right. old-fashioned daddy that's long right. legs. Now, what are these things that look like ladybugs? That there used to be a few of them around here, but the last couple of years they've just gone cuckoo and are in everybody's house.
Those are ladybugs, too. That's an invasive ladybug, though. It didn't used to be here. It's here now. No natural predators. Explosion.
It's like a Japanese beetle or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's an Asian import. So
we need to bring something in to eat these things.
Well, I don't know. That's Some people have suggested that, but you know, when you bring one invasive species in to combat another invasive species, then you may be introducing more unexpected complications, and so it's actually a hard call.
Now, throughout the bug world, were you guys just going cuckoo in the last 6 months getting ready for Brood 10? I mean, was there like a palpable buzz? Could you guys feel the tension? Were all you bug doctors just on the edge of your seats and getting your lab coats all in a bunch?
The media hype was something.
Because you, well, I mean, the media hype was one thing. Go buy your cicada T-shirt. Yay. But I'm talking about this was real live. Every 17 years you get to observe this. Was this, were you guys, you know, really thrilled, or was it, this is just something to get the rubes excited?
I have to say my lab coat was not in a bunch. But, you know, it's an exciting thing. I mean, it really is kind of an amazing, spectacular display of insects that you don't get to see a lot anymore. Right. You know, there used to be other insect populations, like on Lake Erie, there used to be big, huge, you know, emergences of mayflies. But because of pollution in Lake Erie, we don't see that anymore because those insects are very susceptible to pollution. But, you know, cicadas are remarkable creatures. They live for, you know, some of them live for 17 years as larvae. Most insects don't live that long. That's a long time for anything to live, actually.
Somebody told me that 17 years was the longest lifespan of any insect in the insect classification.
I've read that assertion with respect to cicadas before. There have been some claims that queen termites can possibly live upwards that long. But, you know, I don't study termites either, but... But actually, in one of Ed Wilson's books, The Insect Societies, he makes an assertion that queen termites can live possibly near that long. But it's actually hard to tell because they're inside of a termite colony. But yeah, they probably are, if not the, they are among the longest-lived insects, for sure.
What's the deal with the queens always being in charge? Where are the dudes in all this?
Well, most social systems are matriarchal. Almost all social systems are matriarchal. I mean,
this goes back to your why you got interested in bugs, because of the social system aspect.
Right. You know, wasps and termites actually are not matriarchal. There is a king termite also, and their workers are both male and female, but that's sort of a bizarre exception. Most societies are structured entirely around the females. There are some exceptions. The great ape societies, you know, including humans, we don't appear to be particularly matriarchal. But most other social systems, whether bird, mammal, or insect, tend to be run mostly by females.
Now, when an ant crawls up your leg, does he think, hey, I'm going to crawl up this guy's leg, or does he think, dude, this tree is messed up?
Well, she probably thinks...
That's a good question, actually. That's better than my stoned mosquito story.
Thanks.
Yeah, I don't think she's thinking either of those things.
Because you always hear, like, a shark bites you, but a shark thinks it's biting a seal. Which, that's nonsense. The shark knows what it's doing. I'm just wondering if an ant crawling up your...
Yeah, I mean, they're just foraging. They're not trying to find something, you know, to sting. They're just foraging, looking for food or what have you.
They're just wandering around.
Sure.
Is little kids killing bugs, is that, where do you stand on that? Is that bad?
I think Jeffrey Dahmer did some of that, you know, killing animals and stuff.
I mean, no, not animals, because there's a difference between a, you know.
Say animal, what you're mostly talking about is insects, so, you know.
Right, well, everybody kills insects every day in their everyday life. You can't help it. Yeah, well, I'm talking about the intentional capture and killing of ants or spiders or grasshoppers. We haven't even talked about grasshoppers.
No, we haven't. Or crickets.
Which we should talk about, because, you know, some people think cicadas are locusts, and there's a story behind that, which I could tell if you'd like to hear.
First of all, tell us what a locust is.
I know about grasshoppers.
So you can use the words interchangeably?
No, when you really can't. I mean, some people do, but the reason people refer to cicadas as locusts is we know why. It's when, you know, in the early 1700s, when some of the first European settlers were really getting here and they saw these emergences, the only frame of reference they had for these massive swarms, quote unquote, of insects was the biblical story of locust swarms, and they thought they were locusts.
So they don't have these in England?
They don't have these cicadas.
Or Amsterdam and Germany and Scotland.
Exactly. They didn't have them where they came from. So they had never seen periodical cicadas before, and and they thought they were locusts, and so the name just kind of stuck. And even, like, I grew up in the South, and people refer to cicadas as locusts there. But locusts are actually a kind of grasshopper, so.
And cicadas are not related to, they can't hop at all.
Well, they are related, but distantly so, yeah. I mean.
But the locust and the grasshopper are like
cousins. They're not close relatives. They're not anywhere near being close relatives, yeah.
Okay.
Not close at all.
So the only thing they have in common, the only thing the cicada and a locust have in common is when they arrive in massive amounts of numbers.
Right, right.
But other than that, they don't.
They both sort of appear in groups.
Kind of like sports fans.
Exactly. Now, what did the frogs do?
They had swarms of frogs.
When they said there was a plague of frogs, that didn't seem too intimidating. I'm going to send a bunch of frogs.
It would be if a billion frogs showed up on your doorstep one morning.
Well, yeah, but really. What do frogs do?
Well, this guy studies bugs, not amphibians.
Well, plague you. I don't
frogs
know.
Eat bugs.
True.
Thus, this part of the cycle of life.
Oh, so all the locusts showed up, pissed off Pharaoh, then all the frogs showed up to eat all the locusts,
maybe,
right?
Maybe that was part of the plan.
That was part of the cycle, the environmental cycle.
Maybe.
Hey, we have an open phone line. Did we mention that?
Who cares?
Give a call at 513-749-1444. Get in on this. Again, that's 513-749-1444. The Reds won tonight in another stunning victory, holding firmly on to first place. And do we have anything else to add to that?
Daniels is located at Short Vine, and Daniels there in Clifton.
They have a good cheeseburger.
Now, what is, you mentioned earlier a movie called, we're talking to the wicked Dr. Pickett. You mentioned earlier a movie called The Wasp Woman. The
Wasp Woman, right.
What is your favorite all-time bug movie? Because earlier we talked about Killer Bees.
Right.
I don't know if you remember the movie called The Swarm.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a dog.
Actually, my favorite bee insect film is one called Them, which is about giant ants.
That's a classic.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Well, I mean, that's actually a good movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's good as they go. Mothra versus Godzilla is pretty high up there too.
Yeah, we haven't talked about moths yet tonight either.
Well, it's true we haven't.
Are moths insects?
Sure, yeah. They're close relatives of butterflies, order Lepidoptera, right?
What's the difference between a moth and a butterfly?
Well, that's actually an interesting question. It turns out that, there is a real group called butterflies, and they are all most closely related to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this sort of group that contains the butterflies that we call moths. And so there isn't really a sort of distinct lineage that we can point to that is the moth lineage, but they tend to be nocturnal. They have plumos antennae, so they have antennae that have lots of little projections coming off of them, unlike butterflies. But those are the main differences: nocturnal versus living in the day, diurnal.
How can a dog eat a bee and not get stung? We've all seen this. Just your dog's in the backyard, and he starts chasing a bee, and he just eats the bee, and he doesn't get stung.
Well, how do you know he didn't get stung?
Maybe his tongue did.
Well, I mean, some hound dogs obviously have very rough mouths because it's so the raccoon or whatever can bite them, and it doesn't hurt them. Or in your case, probably the gator.
Yeah,
your gator hound.
Exactly.
When you went gator hunting.
That's
there.
That's right.
But can some dogs just do that?
Well, I don't know if they ate it fast enough, I guess.
Did you ever go gator hunting when you lived in the swamp?
Never hunting, no. But I've seen some.
You've eaten gator, though, haven't you?
I have.
Gator jerky?
No, I never ate any jerky.
Gator kebab?
I ate some gator in a gumbo once.
How was it?
It was, it was greasy.
All right, let's talk to John.
Hello, John. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine. What's on your mind, John?
I like your, I really like your show. I appreciate you being on the air here.
Thank you, John.
I received an email, a month or two ago about these sand spiders in Iraq. What's the deal with these things? These things are they as hideous as they look?
Kurt, do you know about Iraqi sand spiders?
I do not. I wouldn't be surprised if there were some spiders that lived there.
They looked like they were about a foot long.
I'm sure they're not that big.
They had a picture of, they were holding it up, and they looked like they were about a foot long. They said they travel about 10 miles an hour. Across the sand.
10 miles an hour is moving for a spider, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, they're not. They're definitely not that big. There aren't any insects that are that big.
Now, how big is the what is generally known as the largest spider in the world?
largest spider? I don't know. Probably it would be a tarantula of some kind.
And how fast?
This probably is a tarantula, I would imagine. You know, I don't know how fast they can go. They're not particularly known for being fast-moving creatures. They're
aren't they just
slow.
Take, like, yeah, they don't they wait, yeah. And then something walks by, then they
yeah, I mean,
try
they
to
can,
grab it?
They can pounce, but they don't sort of run really fast, I wouldn't think,
yeah,
for
not,
long
they're
periods
not catching
of time.
Jackrabbit. You know, John, I don't know how to break this to you, buddy, but you know, sometimes people will email you things that may not be 100% accurate.
Well, this is true. This is true.
But there may be spiders there, and they may be causing problems. I don't know. I haven't heard anything or read anything about that.
All right, John. We got the staff looking it up for you.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Where is the paradise for a bug doctor? Where is just that absolutely teeming with bugs? Is it the South American rainforest?
Yeah, definitely. The New World tropical rainforest is the most diverse for insects, for anything, basically. Also, Southeast Asia is very diverse, but the New World tropics are the most diverse for sure. And I have spent some time there, and I will be going back there this winter, their summer, in Brazil.
And here's a simple question, but it's about one everybody around here needs to know. When the wintertime comes around, we don't see
hold on,
flies.
Hold on, you guys.
Oh, Jesus.
I got the skinny on the sand spider here.
Let's go.
It says here, hold on, don't move. Sand spiders have broad and low bodies that hug the ground. They are dark brown in color and have thick black hairs that jut from their legs and are used to detect tremors of other creatures touching the ground. Scroll down.
I'm glad you're
sand spiders live in tunnels beneath the desert
sand
ground.
Spiders.
Sand spiders attack from surprise and hunt by creating sinkholes for prey to fall through or by hiding beneath the soft sand and leaving out to surprise their prey, depending on the desert type. Funny that we just came across this, because I saw a special on National Geographic last night. You saw it too, right, Jim? And these guys, they burrow a little hole, and then they hide underneath the sand. And then here comes a little ant walking along. He's just walking along, doing a little ant business, whatever ant's doing or walking along. And then the ant doesn't realize, but he just walked into a crater. And then the spider comes out of the crater and starts throwing sand up the hill, up the crater hill, so that the ant can't walk up the hill anymore. Have you seen this?
Nope.
I'm serious. I saw this on National Geographic two nights ago. And, John, if you're still listening, that National Geographic channel repeats stuff.
But is this thing a foot long? Or is this a generic sand spider? Is this the specific
Iraqi? It's
not a foot long.
It's a little bigger than an ant. Like, if an ant's that big, it's, like, a couple times bigger.
Nah, John's email said he saw a picture of a guy holding one up, and it was a foot long, and it moved to 10 miles an hour.
He's tripping out.
All right, good. So there is such... We knew that. We knew there were sand spiders.
They dig these little burrows.
We knew there were sand spiders, dude. But we didn't know about the Iraqi foot-long sand spider. You failed in your mission. You disgust me, you troll. In the wintertime, the flies all freeze and die. How do they come back to life in April?
Flies?
Just your regular, get the hell out of my house. And bees and all that stuff.
Well, they do different things. I mean, they all pass the winter at different stages. Some insects pass the winter as adults. And in that case, you know, they usually try to find something like an old stump that maybe is a little rotting, and so it's emitting a little bit of a heat, and maybe they'll overwinter there. Some insects, some flies, for example, overwinter as pupae. So they grow as maggots, and then they you know, develop a pupal case around them, and then they pass the winter in the soil.
What do your friend the wasp do?
Most wasps, you know, they overwinter as adults. The social wasps that I study, only the queens pass the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And they do what I said a minute ago. They find an area like a stump or behind the bark of a tree that's a little bit protected. Most of them die. Probably something like 98% of them die. But the 2% that survive, you know, are strong and they build nests.
Now, have you ever had a bunch of redneck kids come to your museum and call them waspers? Because all the hillbilly kids in Hamilton all call them waspers. Hey, man, get away from that wasper. He's going to get you.
Well, I've never heard them called waspers, but, you know, the American Museum is the largest, has the largest display of any museum, natural history museum in the world.
Yeah, where's the largest?
Millions and millions of people come in every year. So,
so yeah, well, now you can do that.
To listen for that wasper.
Hey, man, get a wasper. Who has the largest collection of Drosophila in the world?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, actually.
How about Bowling Green State University?
Is it really?
Yes. You can go ahead.
The largest collection of Drosophila.
Fruit flies to the common unwashed lemming out there in Radio Land.
Yeah.
This is WAIF. We're talking to the wicked Dr. Pickett, the wasp expert. But tonight he's branching out for us. He's talking cicadas. He's talking ants. He's even talking spiders. He covered the Bible. He talked about frogs for a little bit. He's tackling it all. He's hoping to God that his boss isn't listening. So it's your chance to talk to a real-life entomologist, 513-749-1444. This is Chris and Rob on WAIF. Did I mention Daniels on Short Vine and Daniels? What a restaurant.
If you're a UC fan, Daniels is the place to go. If you're not a UC fan, Daniels is the place to go. Whether you're a sports fan or not, Daniels is a great little club. It's a little bar, a little restaurant. It's been there for years, probably since the 70s. It's had a few different owners over the years. But they're right there at the corner of Daniels and Short Vine, across the street from the fire station and the public library.
Now, can all bugs, we know that, we'll use bug and insects interchangeably here.
That's fine.
We know that ants can't necessarily fly.
Right, ants, well, you know.
Some of them can.
The queens and the males fly.
But they can walk up walls.
Right.
And we know that your friends, the wasp, can not only fly, but can also walk up walls and, like, hang from ceilings and all that stuff. How in the world can, how do they stick to the wall? How do they stick to the ceiling? And do they even know? Do they get dizzy if they're upside down too long?
Well, no, I don't think they get dizzy. Different insects do that different ways. You know, most insects have little pads on their tarsi, which is the end of their, you know, their legs. And they use those little pads for sticking to the wall. They're actually like little suckers. They're not actually suckers, but you can think of them like that.
So is it suction or is it not suction? Sticky.
It's sort of like sticky, but it's not a sticky gooey substance. It's a mechanical kind of sticky. So it's a structure that's actually built of lots of little rows of tinier structures, and they form a kind of adhesion.
Have we been able to replicate this on a larger scale?
There was some recent work done. The military gets a lot of its ideas from insects, actually, and they've recently developed some technology based on these structures for sticking things to things. Yeah, there was some press about it a few years ago.
You ever done anything with the and like spiders and how they build their webs and the geometry and the geography?
But I was in graduate school with another entomologist, Todd Blackledge, who studies.
Todd Blackledge used to quarterback for Penn State.
Right, that Todd Black. No, a different Todd Blackledge, he does. He studies spider web architecture and the function of spider webs and that sort of thing.
Hey, we got a phone call. This will probably be our last one for the night because Lee Harvey's standing by with the Outside Inside Jazz program. John from Cheviot, you're on the Chris and Rob Show, along with our entomologist, Dr. Kurt Pickett.
Hey, man, been a little while since I called you guys. I had an interesting question about them cicadas.
Go ahead.
Well, last time, you know, I was up in kind of southeast or southwestern Ohio, and you know, we were out there and we were shooting at those cicadas like as target practice. And you know, I just wondered, you know, there's like all these cicada cookbooks and, you know, all this stuff going around. I just wondered if there, you know, if there was anything that was sort of, you know, publicized about shooting them.
Any target practice books about cicadas, to your knowledge, Dr.
I don't know of any, but you'd have to be a pretty good shot to hit a cicada.
Well, I'm a real good shot.
He's a good shot. He gets a lot of practice.
Of course, if you miss a cicada, then the bullet goes flying.
You hit a cicada.
Your neighbor's yard. Yeah, even if you hit a cicada.
Well, you got to shoot in an appropriate place. But, all right, now, we were talking anyway while we were shooting them. Now, this guy here, he was calling them locusts. Now, right. Is there a difference between the locust and the cicada?
We covered this already, but we'll recap for you real quick.
Well, I missed that part. I'm sorry. I was drinking.
Yeah, locust. Locusts are grasshoppers, and people sometimes call cicadas locusts, and it's just a mistake.
Which one's the one that makes that noise, that, like, ringing noise?
Well, they both actually make noise, but the noise that you're hearing now is due to cicadas.
That's Conway Twitty's the noise he's hearing now.
Yeah, and it's not from rubbing your legs together. Grasshoppers do it by rubbing their legs together, right?
Well, no, not really.
Okay, but the cicadas actually have a hollow thorax. That's like if your butt was hollow, dude, and there was nothing in there. Well, it's hollow, and it resonates, so it goes like that.
Yeah. It's coming out their butt? That's how they make that sound?
I don't actually know there's a resonance chamber, per se. They have a structure on their dorsal abdomen underneath, and it's sort of a ribbed membrane that they have muscular contractions that cause this noise to happen. I'm not sure there's a chamber, though.
John, we sure appreciate your phone call.
Well, it was nice talking to you guys, and I appreciate you letting me on.
All right, take it easy, buddy. This has been Chris.
Oh, I got one last. This is our last question.
We got to wrap it up, dude.
I know, it's time to go. Here's our last question. What's your favorite insect superhero? You like Ant-Man, Spider-Man? Which one's your favorite?
Well, it's got to be Spider-Man.
He's not an insect, though.
Yeah, it's true. You're right. But, you know.
But for comic books, we're going to let that.
The Wasp. You never seen the Wasp? When the Wasp was, I think Chris will back me up on this. When the Wasp was a full-grown woman, she was hot.
Oh, yeah. I remember Wasp.
You remember the Wasp? She was just called the Wasp, and she was like a sexy little brunette with a little pixie haircut. And then she'd become real small, and she'd go around zapping people.
Hey, thanks for coming down here. Whenever we have insect questions, can we call you up in Manhattan?
No.
Okay.
All right, but thanks for having me down.
We'll do it again.
How many people were here last night? Sounds like about 40 or 50. 40 what? 40, huh? This is a brand new shirt. I wore this. All right, modern lovers. Did you guys see me? I swear. Didn't I take this out of the package tonight? I did. What do you mean? You were too. This is a brand new shirt. What do you mean? If you had said that last night, you would have got me.